For Sifrei Torah here in Eretz Yisrael. They needed more Sfarim. And we had in our shul in Flatbush in Brooklyn, we had a number of extra Sifrei Torah. So he wanted to send them to Israel, but the question that he had was whether he needs permission from those who dedicated and donated the Sifrei Torah, because, you know, maybe they wanted it as an ilui neshama, you know, they gave it, they wanted the shul to have it, not just to say, you know, we can't carte blanche to send it to Israel. So my father was in Brooklyn, I was learning in Rav Soloveitchik Shia, so he said to me, please ask the Rav. So after Shia, I came over to ask the Rav, and he sits down, he starts thinking, he says, no, the mitzvah of Sefer Torah, that's the last of the Tariq mitzvahs, is not just to write the Sefer Torah, but it's also to own the Sefer Torah. So you can't just write a Sefer Torah and then sell it or give it away as a gift. You have to own the Sefer Torah. That's a condition in the mitzvah of Sefer Torah. It's not just ksiva, but it's bailus. And therefore, he said, those who donated the Sefer Torah, they maintain bailus over the Sefer. And therefore, you have to get their permission. So I told this to my father. He was not a happy camper. And he says, all right, I'm going up to New York. He says, I'm going up to the Shia. And he asked the Rav, and he had a whole discussion with the Rav, you know, how they get permission, because these people were long gone. You know, they died, those who donated the Sefer Torah died probably 80 years before that. So you'd have to ask, you know, their Yorshim and figure out who inherited it. There was so much intermarriage. You don't know who's Jewish and who's not Jewish. So finally he convinced the Rav that there's no issue whatsoever. You know, the people who gave the Sefer Torah, they're long gone. They don't know anything about the Sefer Chinuch, that you have to own the Sefer Torah, and if you don't own it, you forfeit the mitzvah. They didn't know from all this stuff. You know, you're going back to the early 1900s in the United States. You know, so that was the story I wanted to tell you.
Thank you. So the Rav was
So the Rav said, send the Sifrei Torah to Eretz Yisrael. And I think the very next day, my father shipped off, I think, 10 Sifrei Torah to Eretz Yisrael. It's like a massive amount. So Rav Osai, we're finishing up today on a sugi that we started a few days ago. I think it's still on the board here, called Yesh Eim LaMikra or Yesh Eim LaMisora. So let's take a few minutes just to review that which we learned and that which we studied about Yesh Eim LaMikra, Yesh Eim LaMisora. So what I'll ask you to do is to turn back to the beginning of the sugya, and again, we're not going to go through the entire sugya again, but just to get the highlights of the sugya, so we can start the brand new sugya today. So we're on Daf Dalid Amud Aleph, on the top of the page. And Rabbi Yitzchak quotes five different controversies amongst the Tanoim, which he claims all of which revolve around this issue of Yesh Eim LaMikra or Yesh Eim LaMisora. And he gives you a list of the five Tanoim who in each one of these machlokos respectively maintain Yesh Eim LaMikra. So what we have to do now is we have to put on our Yesh Eim LaMikra caps, our thinking caps. We have Rebbe, we have Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz, we have Beit Shammai, we have Rabbi Shimon, and we have Rabbi Akiva. So we start with Rebbe. Rebbe looks at the pasuk in Mishpatim, Asher Yashiun Elohim, and based on this pasuk, he comes to the conclusion that a Beis Din for monetary law has to be comprised of five judges. The word Yarshiun in Parshas Mishpatim has what we call a kri and a ksiv. Ksiv meaning the way it's written, and it's written without a vav. And the kri, the way it's vocalized and pronounced, is with a vav. And this is a pattern that's going to repeat itself over and over again. That Yesh Eim LaMisora says, look at the word the way it's written in the Torah, the way the Sofer would write it, and darshan it accordingly. Yesh Eim LaMikra, Mikra Milashon Kriya, how do you read it? And that's based on the tradition of how you read it. Now the tradition adds a letter, in this case a Vav. And Rebbe says, once you add a Vav, then Yarshiun, with the extra vav, becomes plural instead of singular. And that's going to jack up the number of judges that have to sit on the court. The Chachamim say no. Yarshiun should be read without the vav and interpreted thusly, because of the way it's written. That's called Yesh Eim La Misoris. Then we go on to Rabbi Yehuda ben Roitz. In the parasha of Leidas Nekeva, the Torah says that if a woman gives birth to a female, then the first, okay, here's the key word, shivim or shvayim, okay, I'll explain. The first 70 days or 2 weeks, I'd see the 14 days or 70 days, her dam is dam tuma. She has what's called tumas dam leid. Now, if you look at the word as it's written in the Torah, not the way we read the word, then it says shivim. But if you add a vav, the way we read it, the way we punctuate it and therefore read it, it's vocalized as shvuayim. And the difference between shivim is the difference between 70 and shvuayim. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Roe says that she only has to wait 2 weeks, 14 days, shvuayim, in order to transfer from dam tuma to dam tar. The Chachamim, apparently, and this we're going to take up in a few minutes, disagree. They say, well, look at the pasuk itself. The pasuk itself says shivim. And we read it, yesh eim lamesoris, the way it appears in the Torah. It doesn't have shvuayim, you don't have the extra vav. So it doesn't say 2 weeks, it says 70 days. The Chachamim, by the way, will have to admit that they have to come up with another alternative derivation for the fact that she's Tmeya only 14 days, and that's going to be based on a mirror image between Zohar and Nekeva, if you remember. Then we have the third Tana that Rabbi Yitzchak mentions on the list, and that is Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai, and here we're learning about Kodshim, are of the opinion that in the case of a chatos chitzona, where the Torah requires four zrikos on the four corners of the mizbeach, say Beit Shammai, two out of the four are critical, are absolutely ikuva. And if, for example, he was zorek the dam on one of the four kronos, then the korban is not mechaper. He has to bring a substitute replacement korban. And Beis Hillel say no. As long as he did one zrika on one of the four kronos, then kiper, the karban is valid. What's the machlokas? The question is how to read the word kronos, or how to interpret the word kronos. The word kronos is written three times over and over again in the parasha of Chatos. Two out of the three times, the word kronos appears without a vav. Once, it appears with a vav. So if we take what's called yesh eim lemesores, and we look at the way it's written, then when we calculate kronos, what number do we come up with? The number four. Because twice it's written in the singular without the vav, and only once it's written in the plural with the vav. So if we look at the way it appears in the Torah, that's called yesh eim lemesores, then we come up with four. Now, if we come up with four kronos, then Beis Hillel say that you take these four kronos and you ask yourself how many times did the Torah repeat itself, and the answer is zero. The Torah never repeated itself. And therefore, we have a principle in Kodshim that kol sheshina kosev liakev, that it's only when the Torah repeats itself, then it's likuva, then it's critical. The Torah never repeated itself about the kronos, hence none of these four zrikos are critical. So the Gemara asks, do you mean, Beis Hillel, that even if he has zero zrikos, he doesn't do even one zrika? That's impossible. We've never had a korban that's kosher without at least a minimum of one zrika. So he says, no, you need the one zrika because of the principle of kapara. There's one of the four avodos that are necessary is zrika. Beis Shammai, on the other hand, say that the number of kronos is six. Even though twice it says it b'loshon Yachid, but we read it as Kranos. We don't read it Karnos, but rather Kranos, as if there were a Vav there. Now, if you have three Kranos, and each one has a Vav, again, in the Torah itself, only one has a Vav, but we're going to read it with a Vav, that's called Yesh Eim LeMikra, then how many Kranos do we come up with? Six. Well, there are only four Kranos to the Mizbeach. The extra two are called Shina Kosav Likuva, that the Torah repeated itself to tell you what's Ma'akeh. Hence, Beit Shammai come to the conclusion that two Zrikos, bare minimum, are critical. And then we get to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is going to address the case of a sukkah. How many tefanos do we need in a sukkah? And it all depends on the word sukkos. If you read the word sukkos over and over again with a vav, although the Torah left out the vav, then you come up with the magic number four. And that means that you require four tefanos to make a sukkah. However, we have a loch l'mosh mi-Sinai that one of the tefanos is tefach. All you need is a tefach. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon comes to the conclusion, yesh eim la-mikra. How do we read the word sukkos? We read it as if there were a vav there. Hence, we're going to require four tefanos, one of which, by virtue of the loch l'mosh mi-Sinai, is a tefach. But three full tefanos, without any leniency whatsoever, is an absolute critical requirement. The Chachamim say all you need is three defanos, the third of which is a tefach, because I'm going to read the pasuk as sukkos without the vav, which means it is in singular. Yesh eim lamesoris. And finally, we come up with the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva looks at the word nefashos in the parasha of Tumas Ohel, and Rabbi Akiva says, let's read it the way it's meant to be read. In the Torah, it's written nefashas without the vav. But we're going to read it as nefashos. That's called yesh eim lemikra, as if it says two nefashos. Hence, if you have two corpses, what's the plural of corpse? Corpses? Corpse-eye? Anyway, so you have two dead bodies, and each one contributed to this oil a half of a revius of dam. Then we have what's called sirif shiur. We can add the half a revius of Reuven's dam and half a revius of Shimon's dam, put them all together, you get a revius dam, and it's mitami betumas oel. The Chachom say, no, let's not read it as nefashos with a vav. It doesn't say it with a vav. In the Torah, it's not written with a vav. That's called yesh eim la misores. So therefore, Rabbi Yitzchak concludes that there are five issues, five controversies in different areas of halacha, all of which will be contingent on one question. The issue is yesh eim la mikra, yesh eim la mesoris. All this is before Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Comes along Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, this is on Daf Dalet, Amud Aleph, on the bottom of the page. Mi ikka de lesle, is it possible to question the principle of yesh eim la mikra? If you're going to question the principle of yesh eim la mikra, you're going to take a parash in the Torah and completely remove it. And that's the parash of what? Basam Cholov. Because instead of Cholov, as the way we read it, you're going to look at the way it's written, and it's written as Chelev. And the only time you're going to be chayav for Bishul is when you take Chelev and you cook it with a gedi, with meat. Nobody maintains that, which means that it's absolutely universally accepted that yesh eim la mikra, we have to read the word not the way it's written, which is yesh eim la mesoris, but rather the way it's read, we vocalize it as chalav imo, the milk of its mother. If it's chalav imo, hence we have the iser abos mechol. At this point we get to the avdalit omid beis. I'm just giving you an overview of the sugya that we learned. And the Gemara now retracts everything that we said. All Tanoim agree without question that yesh eim la mikra. And if yesh eim la mikra, we always have to interpret the word the way we know how to read it, even if we have to add a vav to the word. And therefore, we got to go back to the top and reinterpret each one of these five machlokas. So let's go back to the case of Beis Din, that's Rebbe. Rebbe said that Yarshiun is in plural, and therefore, Elohim, which refers to the judges, has to be read in plural. Hence, we produce four judges, because although in three cases it says Elohim in the singular, but in one case it says Yarshiun Elohim, means they will find the accused guilty, and therefore you have to have two judges. Two plus another two equals four. So what do the Chachamim say? And they argue that you only need three judges. And the answer is, even though they agree Yashi'un is in plural, but Yashi'un is not referring to two separate judges, but rather to one judge that makes up the court. And then the second judge is the one that's indicated by the second Elohim. And then we have the third Elohim, hence we end up with three judges. Then we get to Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz. And we never found that the Chachamim rejected Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz. They also agree Yeshem Lemikra, and therefore we interpret the word not as Shiv'im, but as Shvu'ayim, hence 2 weeks of Dam Tuma. Then we get to Beis Shammai. And Beis Shammai, in the case of Zrikas Dam Chatos, insists that you need a minimum of two Zrikos that are critical. Beis Hillel say all you need is one. And the Gemara says Beis Hillel derived the halach of one, even though they agreed to Yeshem Lemikra, from a different drush, a different yalfus, and that was v'chiper, v'chiper, v'chiper. Now whenever the Torah says v'chiper, it's telling you to lower the standards of kapara, meaning the carbon is machaper, even in such a case. And since the Torah repeats itself three times superfluously, v'chiper, each one reduces the amount of zrikos that you have to have. So we're going to start with four zrikos, but we're going to lower it one, two, three times, ending up with one zrika. And finally we get to Rabbi Akiva. And the Chachamim of Rabbi Akiva, who are not willing to be mitzarif a chatzi revius of dam from two different nefashos, they agree that yesh eim lemikra, they have to agree yesh eim lemikra, otherwise we're stuck with pasim mechalot. But they say that the word nefashos, as we read it, with a vav, is referring to nefashos di alma. In other words, in each case of an OL, you have to know if there's dam of a nefesh. So is the dam of all the nefashos, meaning general. But in this particular OL, there's a dam of only one nefesh. Then the Gemara says no. You've got to admit that there are two opinions about yesh eim lemikra and yesh eim lemesoris. And here the Gemara quotes an issue between Rabbi Yishmael and the Chachamim about how do we derive that tefillin shel rosh require four batim. A beautiful sugya. The Torah says litotafos. Now, this word litotafos appears in two different parashios. In the first parasha tefillin, which is in Bo, in Shmos, and in the second parasha tefillin, which is in Vaschanon in Dvarim. However, although it appears three times, only once is it written in the plural with the word vav. Therefore, there are two totafos in the singular without the vav. That gives me two batim. And the totafos with a vav gives me another two batim. Hence, says Rabbi Shmuel, we derive four batim. Well, says Rav Acha, you know what? If we're applying the principle of yesh eim lamikra, then you end up with six batim, because in each case we're going to read it with a vav. Obviously, Rabbi Shmuel maintains that yesh eim lamesores. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, takes the word totafos and he interprets it by splitting it into two parts as tat pas. Tat refers to two, pas refers to two, hence the number four. But Rabbi Shmuel bases it on the fact that only once is the word totafos written with a vav, twice it's written without a vav. Obviously, then, Rabbi Shmuel embraced the principle of yesh eim lemesorim. So now the Gemara goes back to its original understanding of all those five cases that we discussed, and their interpretation that they're arguing that yesh eim lemikra, yesh eim lemesora. Ella says the Gemara, li olam pligi. I'm going to go back to the original understanding of each one of those machlokas. But we're going to have to whittle it down. I'm going to say that when is there a machlokas between yesh eim lemesora and yesh eim lemikra? That's only when there's a confrontation and a conflict between Yeshem Lemikra and Yeshem Lemesoris. But in the case of Chalev or Cholov, there's no conflict. Why? Because we're not adding a letter. We're not adding a letter to the Ksiv. Dechi Adadi Ninhu. Okay, so let's just see where we're up to. If you count on Daf Dalet Amud Beis, this is the last Gemara that we learned yesterday. You can count up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines up. No, I'm sorry. My mistake. You have to go a little bit further. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 lines up. You see Hadadi Ninu? 9 lines up. If you just add one word, Chalav Chalav Kidechi Hadadi Ninu is then Yesh Eim LeMikra. Everybody agrees that Yesh Eim LeMikra, if we have 3 letters and we just don't know how to vocalize those 3 letters, it's not a conflict between the way it's written in the Torah, which gives us one word, and the way we read it, which is giving us a different word, an entirely different word. The question is, what does this word mean? It says Chet Lamed Bet. There's no issue about adding a vav, subtracting a vav. There's no confrontation here between the Kri and the Ksiv. The only question is, what is the Kri? So everybody agrees that in this case we're going to say Yeshem LeMikra. Why? Because there's no conflict. If there's no conflict, we just have to know how to read the word. And that's where the vocalization comes in, the Kriya. And the Kriya is Chalav Imo. So again, when is a conflict because the Torah left out a vav, then there's one thrust, one sheet of many, many Tanoim, as we saw. It comes out to number 6. 6 different Tanoim are going to maintain Yeshem LeMisaris. And we're going to interpret the word the way it's written. And all our halachas that we're going to derive are, reflect the way it's written in the Torah. That's called Yesh Eim LeMisaris. However, in the case where there's no issue about how it's written and how it's read, the only question is, how do you vocalize those 3 letters? What vowels are you going to put? Is it a tseirah under the ches and it's chelev? Or is it a pasach under the ches, which means chalav imo, but a chelev but chalav? So then we go according to the tradition as how we have to vocalize. That's called the Kriya, and that's called Yesh Eim LeMikra. So to summarize this sugya in 2 sentences, the final conclusion is that there is a gigantic controversy about whether Yesh Eim LeMisaris we should interpret the word the way it's written, or Yesh Eim LeMikra we should interpret the way it's vocalized, the way it's vowelized. But that machlokas only applies when there's a discrepancy between the way it's written and the way it is read. But if there's no discrepancy, it's the same 3 letters, like in the case of Chet, Lam, and Bet in Lo Sivash and Gedim B'Chalav Imo, then the whole issue is whether we read it this way or whether we read it that way, then everybody agrees Yesh Eim LeMikra. And now we get up to the final piece in this sugya. And that's the case of Aliyah LeRegel. It's always good to end with Aliyah LeRegel. There's going to be a massive Aliyah LeRegel in September. I don't know if you know about it. No, I'm just kidding. We're all going to come out of the woodwork. Anyway, it says the following. Upli. The Gemara says, this is how many lines up from the bottom? 8 lines, we said? Upli. In other words, we're going to find a machlokas tanoim about the issue of Yesh Eim LeMikra and Yesh Eim LeMisaris in a case of Aliyah LeRegel. What's the case? Vare Yireh Yeroeh. The pasuk says in Shmos Chav Gimel, if we have a chumash we can open up, it says Yeroeh Kol Zechurcha. Yeroeh Kol Zechurcha. So what the Torah says, you can look in, if we don't have a chumash, you can look in the Torah R. It says Shalosh Pa'amim Bashana. You see that at the bottom of Torah R? You have the Torah R? Shalosh Pa'amim Bashana. Yeroeh Kol Zechurcha Espnei Ha'adon Hashem. So the word is written Yeroeh. Okay. Now, here, there's no question about the letters of the word. So there's no conflict here between Yesh Eim LeMisaris and Yesh Eim LeMikra. But we do have a question as to how to vocalize the word. And there's Yireh and Yeroeh. So that's called, in the Gemara's language, Dechi Hadadi Ninhu, means as far as the letters of the Torah, there's no discrepancy between Yesh Eim LeMesoras and Yesh Eim LaMikra. It's exactly like the case of Chalav or Chelev in Basam Cholav. But the issue is, how should we read it? Upligi. And to our astonishment, we still find Machlokas Tanoim. What is this all about? A blind person, Rachmana Litzlan, is completely exempt from the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regla. But what about a person who has sight in one eye and he lost sight in another eye? He's called a Suma B'Ayin Achas. On that issue, we're going to have a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra and the Chachamim. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra is going to tell us that such an individual who's a Suma B'Achas Mi'enov is Potur from the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. Desanya. And we're going to quote Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra from a brisa at the very beginning of Masechta Chagiga. And the brisa is going to interpret this pasuk that we saw Sholosh Pi'amim Bashona Yeroe Kol Zchurchas Pnei Ha'adon Hashem, which means that every male in Israel is obligated in the mitzvah of Aliyah to the Beis Hamikdash Leheraos Lifnei Hashem Barega. So Yeroe means to appear in front of the Almighty. So Yochanan ben Dahavi Omer Mishum Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra ben Tema Hasuma B'Ayin B'Achas Me'enav Potur Min Hari'iyah. How does he know that if he is blind in one eye, he's exempt from the mitzvah Aliyah L'Regel? Shenemar, because the Torah says Yeroeh Kol Zechurcha. Now, we have here a Mesores and we have a Mikra. The Mesores, which again is the way that the Torah is written, has Yud, Resh, Aleph, He. And when you read this word Yud, Resh, Aleph, He, then the simple way you would read it until we get to the Mikra, which is the Kri of the Pasuk, is going to be Yireh, he will see. So let's read it the way the Masora would have it. Shalosh Pa'amim Bashana Yireh Kol Zchurcha Es Pnei Hashem. We have to come up to the Beis HaMikdash to see the Almighty, meaning to see the Shekhinah, to behold the Shekhinah. However, we read it Yeroeh. Notice we have the tradition that instead of putting a chirik under the yud, we're going to put a tzereh under the yud. We could also change the vocal of the resh. So instead of yireh, you will see, it's yeroeh, which means that God will see. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, and he says that in this case, where you could read the word in one way, or you could read it in the other way, read it in one way based on the letters as they're written, read it a different way based on the tradition of the Kri, how we're meant to read it, then what we're going to do is we're going to validate both the Ksiv and the Kri. And what we're going to do is we're going to derive something from both by equating the two. How so? Kiderech Sheba liros, kach ba leiros. What it means is the following. Ma liros bishtei enov, af leiros bishtei enov. Liros is referring to Yeroeh. Yeroeh means God will see you. You appear and God will see you. God sees with two eyes. Again, this is all, of course, kaviyoch. So too, you will appear because you have two eyes. So if we start with this word of liros, liros which means Yireh, and again you could read it as Yireh if you only have the Mesores of Yud Reish Aleph Hey. Yireh means Re'iyah. Re'iyah in a normal Re'iyah would be two eyes. Yeirah means your obligation to avail, to appear in front of Hashem. So just like Hashem is going to see you, you have to be seen. And that hekesh between Yesh Eim LeMesores and Yesh Eim LeMikra is going to give us the requirement of seeing with two eyes, to the exclusion of a Suma who only sees with one eye. Whose opinion is this? That's Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema. The Chachamim, on the other hand, say that Yesh Eim LeMikra, and that's all we care about is the way we read it. We don't read it as Yireh, which means a Re'iyah, right? Which means that a person sees, and he sees with two eyes, right? Kederach Hashem Baliros, right? Re'iyah of Hashem is with two eyes. No, we read it Yireh. And if it's Yireh, it means you have to appear in front of Hashem. It doesn't tell you about how you have to see with two eyes. So the Chachamim hold that a blind person in one eye is obligated in the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. What we see from this is that if there's Yeshem L'Mikra, Yeshem L'Mesores, even in a case when there's no additional letter or subtraction of a letter, and the same letters appear in the Torah, nevertheless, we're going to have a machlokas, two tanoim are at loggerheads as to whether or not we interpret it based on Yeshem L'Mesores. So at this point, the Gemara rescinds its original position and holds that even in a case where there's no discrepancy between the letters of the Torah the way it's written and the letters of the Torah the way it's read, even so, we're going to have a man the Omar who's going to say Yesh Eim Lamesores. And if that be the case, then we're stuck with Basa B'Chala. Why? Because in the case of Basa B'Chala, the Torah uses three letters, whether it's the Ksiv or the Kri, Chet, Lam, and Bet. And therefore, we should have an opinion, which would reflect the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema, that Yesh Eim La Mesores. So again, let's just go through the two premises of the Gemara. We finally concluded that there is a bona fide machlokas, whether Yesh Eim La Mikra, Yesh Eim La Mesores. We had a problem with the case of Basa B'Chala, because everybody agrees that it's referring to Chalav Imo, because of Yesh Eim LeMikra. And we answer that the only machlokas between Yesh Eim LeMikra, Yesh Eim LeMesores, is when there's a discrepancy between the letters of the word as the word is written in the Torah, and the letters of the word as we read the Torah. And therefore, in the case of Chalav, where there's no discrepancy between the Ksiv and the Kri, everybody agrees that Yesh Eim LeMikra, the way we read it. Then we got to the point where we had Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema comes up with a Tema. What's the Tema? How could it be that even though the same letters appear in the Torah, whether you read it that way or whether you write it that way, it's always going to be Yud Reish Aleph Hey. Nevertheless, we're going to interpret the word in two different ways simultaneously. We're going to introduce Yesh Eim LaMesores, and at the same time Yesh Eim LaMikra. Yesh Eim LaMesores means that we're going to read it as Yireh, and Yesh Eim LaMikra means we read it as Yireh. And both are correct, and therefore we're going to reconcile the two. And we're going to say that there's an equation here between Yireh and Yeroeh, and Kederach Shebo Liros, Kach Bo Leros. Only when there's a Re'iyah, which is the normal Re'iyah, which is two eyes, then there's a mitzvah Leros to show up in the Beis HaMikdash, when you have two eyes. Now we're stuck with the word Chalav. Because now we're going to have Yesh Eim LeMesores even when there's no discrepancy between the letters as they're written and the letters as they're read. Elomar of Acha Bereid Ravika. Do you know why we have to interpret the word Chalav according to Yesh Eim LeMikra the way we read it as Chalav Imo? The answer is Omar Kra. The pasuk says Lo Siv Hashel Gidi. The Torah says that the Iser of Basa B'Chala depends upon Bishul. And what that means is Derech, Bishul, Asra, Torah. Those four words appear all over the place. There's a very famous sugya in the Sechta Chulin called Derech, Bishul, Asra, Torah. And the Gemara establishes that you're only chayav for Bishul if you do it the normal way, an act of Bishul. And the Gemara therefore excludes, for example, what's called kavush. Kavush means if you take a piece of meat and you soak it in milk. Even though we normally say that it's kavush, if you leave it there for 24 hours, it's kimavushal. But that's not a mice of bishal. That's not the normal way of bishal. Dereth bishal asura Torah. In fact, there's one of the most famous mishnahs in Shas is in Chulin Daf Kuf Ches. It's called Tipas Cholov. Shenoflal Chatichas Basar. So a drop of milk, hot milk, fell on a piece of hot meat. And the Gemara says that even if there's no bittul, nevertheless, you don't violate basar b'chol d'oraisa because they're a bishul asur Torah, and that's not called bishul. That's not the normal way you cook it. So now we have to figure out what's the normal way of cooking. The normal way of cooking is that when you have a liquid substance and you have a solid substance, you put one into the other, you turn on the fire. In the case of chalev, however, we don't put chalev together with meat and soak them together and turn on the fire. That's not the normal way of bishul. Instead, what we do is we take oil and we fry it. That's called tigun. Tigun is not the same as bishul. So for example, if I would take milk and meat and I would put it into a frying pan and then I would turn on the fire, that's called tigun, that's not called bishul. So at least on a d'oraisa level, I would not violate the isur los vashel gediva chalevimo because it's not derech bishul.
Shouldn't you depend how much milk you got and how much meat you got?
Could be, you're right. You're right, that's not such a great example. But in any event, in the case of chalev, chalev, which is called shuman, I mean, the difference between chalev and shuman is only in the location in the body. That's why you need a traver to figure out where is the chalev and remove it. So chalev is not generally used b'toras bishul. In other words, if you want to heat up chalev and eat hot chalev, what you do is you fry it. Frying it means that you don't need any liquid. You just put it into the oven and it sort of fries in its own liquid. So also, let's just summarize. How do I know that the chet lamed bet of bishul bas v'cholav is referring to cholav and not chet? If you're going to tell me yesh eim lemikra, then you're going to undermine the shita of Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema, and for that matter, maybe the other five shitas of Tanoim, all of whom adopt the position of yesh eim lemisora. So you're going to have to come up with another justification for interpreting the word chet lamed bet as chalav and not as chalev, and that's going to be lo sevashel derech bishul osra Torah. But what do we want to take out of this sugya? And we come up with a tool for all of Shas. Whenever there's an issue about how to read the pasuk, as opposed to the way it's written, and even in a case where it's the same identical letters, but given the way those letters are written, you could read it one way. And given the way that we traditionally, based on the Mesoras, we read the word, we have a major issue. And it's going to push it, rip up the, you know, there's going to be an amazing machlokas here, and that's called Yesh Eim LeMikra, Yesh Eim LeMesora. And all of Shas, this issue is going to come up. Even though at one point, Rav Acha bar Yaakov prevailed over the sugya, that there cannot be a machlokas about yesh eim lemisora. There is no yesh eim lemisora. Everybody has to agree yesh eim lemikra in the case of chalav imo. And therefore we reinterpreted the whole five cases about yesh eim lemikra, yesh eim lemisora. Everybody agrees yesh eim lemikra. But now, the Gemara says, I have another alternative method. I can accept yesh eim lemisores, and I can still know that the word chet lamed bet is chalav and not chalev. Rabosai, at this point we make a siyum on Shas, and we go back to Masechta Sanhedrin. So as I told you in the beginning of the week, it was up to you to decide whether you wanted to travel through Shas. We learned Taras, we learned Kodshim, we learned a little about Zrikas Dam and Chatos. We learned about Tumas Oel. We studied about Tefanis and Sukkah. We had a machlokas about how many zrikos are absolutely necessary on a chatas chitzona. We had a discussion about how many batim required in Tfilin Shel Rosh. I mean, we really took a tiyul. You know, some people miss my shiur because they're on a tiyul. In this case, you didn't have to miss my shiur. You could have gone on a tiyul through Shas without missing the shiur. But now we have to land back in Masechta Sanhedrin. Now, in order to appreciate this sugya that we're about to embark upon, which is the last line on Daf Dalet Amud Beis, going on to the top of Daf Hayam and Aleph, Tana Rabbanan Dini Mamonos Bishlosha, V'imhaya Mubcha L'Rabim, Don Afilu Yechidi, that is such a concept of a Beis Din that's comprised of one single judge. And that judge is called a Yachid Mumcha. A Yachid Mumcha, or a Mumcha L'Rabim, is someone who has a great deal of experience in judgment. He knows the in and outs of the law. And based on his knowledge and his experience, he's just as good as the other two Dayanim that you would add to the Beis Din. And that's called, in the Lashon of the Braisa, Don Afilu Yechidi, that he could judge as a one-man show. So Rabosa, we're going to ask you to do for a moment...
I'm sorry, this isn't for mediation, this is for Gemar Din.
This is for Trilas Din, Gemar Din, the whole gamut. All you need is a Yachid Mumcha. I remember once, my Rebbe, Rav Salvechik, he had a minhag of standing for Shmon Esrei, even during Chazoras HaShatz, on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, it's a killer. And he was getting on in years. So he decided one year, the Rabbinical Council of America used to have a Yarchi Kala for 4 days, the Rebbe would give Shirim in Boston, non-stop. It was unbelievable, like 8 hours a day, times 3 days. And at the end of that Yarchi Kala, he calls over my father, and he says, Rabbi Berzon, please gather together another two Rabbanim. I want to be Matir Neter. This year I don't think I can stand on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur for Chazor Sashat. Basically on Yom Kippur, if it means standing for Chazor Sashat, it means standing the whole day, basically. So by the way, P.S., after they were Matir Neter, the Rav stood anyway, by the way. That's just the postscript to the story. So the story is that my father turns to the Rav, and he says to him with a twinkle in his eye, he says, Rebbe, why do I have to gather together two other Rabbanim? I'm a Yochid Mumcha. I'm an expert. All you need is one. Now, the opposite of a Yochid Mumcha in the language of the Gemara is called a Hedjot. Now, the word hedjot in our context is not pejorative, but the word hedjot in general is kind of like a pejorative term. So the Rav said to my father in Yiddish, I'll say it in Yiddish and then I'll translate it to English. He said, "As du seid a yachid mumche vesach nicht, aber as ze seinen hedjot is bin ich sicher." He said, that whether you're a yachid mumche, Rabbi Berzon, I don't know, I have doubts. But that they are hedyotis, meaning if you get two Rabbon. See, the Rav had a certain cynical attitude towards American Rabbon because he came from Litha, where at the age of zero, you know, you knew half the shots already. So the American Rabbon were not on that level. But I want to take you back to the Mishnah for a moment. And let's turn to Daf Beis Amud Aleph. This is a very long Mishnah, and if you recall, we spent a good deal of time on this Mishnah, but I'd like to hone in and call your attention to one particular part of the Mishnah. And that is, let's see if I can indicate where to find it. Okay, now, it's I guess you would say two-thirds of the way down the Mishnah. And it's Ein Donin Lo Es Hashevet. Let's see, the first word in the line is Ushlosha, but that's not really going to help you much, because the word Ushlosha probably appears over and over again. Let's see if we can find this. Can anybody give me a simon?
Two dots,
that's good, if that helps you. So it says in the Mishnah the following. Ein Donin Lo Es Hashevet, V'lois Novi Sheker, V'lois Kohen Gadol, Ella Alpi Bezdin, Shel Shivim V'Echad. This is the first time in the Mishnah that we have a formulation of what's called the Sanhedrin Agdola, which is comprised of 71 elders. Again, we're going to see another sheet in the Tanon that 70 is enough. V'ein Motzin L'Molchemes Rishus, Ela al pi bezdin shall shivin vi echad. Vi emo sifin al ha'ir vel azoros. Ela al pi bezdin shall shivin vi echad. Etc. To summarize the Mishnah, the part that we're studying, there's an entity called a Beis Din of Shivim V'Echad, of 71 judges. And the Mishnah goes into great detail as to what area of jurisdiction comes under and requires the authority of a Beis Din of Shivim V'Echad. That's the Mishnah itself. However, there is a possibility, and I'm going to ask you if you know what I have in mind, that one person could serve as a Sanhedrin Agdola, Shavu L'Shivim V'Echad. Anybody know who I have in mind?
Moshe.
Excellent, Moshe. The Gemara says that Moshe is Shavu L'Shivim V'Echad. So for example, if you take a look in Parashas Yisro, so Parashas Yisro is all about Yisro's Eitzah to create a judiciary system of judges and courts, lower courts and higher courts. So Yisro says to Moshe, Novel Tibol, you know, you're doing it as a one-man show. This is impossible. Therefore, you have to create a system of courts. A lot of what we're going to be learning in Masechta Sanhedrin is based on the Parashah in Yisro. So Yisro says the following, create these lower courts, V'adover ha-gadol yavinu elecha. Then, again, I don't have time to go through the psukim because I see that, you know, we started a little bit late today, but if somebody, while we're talking, will open up to Parashas Yisro, you'll see that Yisro's Eitzah is Hadover ha-gadol yavinu elecha. Then, when Moshe Rabbeinu gets the command from Hashem, a few psukim later, Hashem says, Dovra Kosha Yavir Nelech. It doesn't say Dovra Gadol, it says Dovra Kosha. Now, why the switch in language? You know, we're very sensitive. You could read this 50 times over and miss it, but if you're sensitive and meticulous about the language of the Torah, why the shift from Dovra Gadol to Dovra Kota? I'm sorry, from Dovra Gadol to Dovra Kosha. So meaning, in the final analysis, Moshe Rabbeinu takes for himself Dovar HaKosha. Yisro said that we should only refer to you, Moshe Rabbeinu, for Dovar HaGadol. So the Brisker Rav, Zichron Levrach, my Rebbe's uncle, says the following. What is the function of Beis Din HaGadol? And the answer is twofold. There are two obligations that are incumbent upon Beis Din HaGadol, the highest court in the land. One is called Dovar HaGadol. What's a Dovar HaGadol? A Dovar HaGadol means that the issue that has to be decided is of such great significance that it requires the highest court in the land. You're judging an entire Shevet as Ovdei Avodah Zarah. I mean, that has a ripple effect throughout the entire nation of Israel. You're judging a Navi. We rely on the Navi, and now we're accusing him of being a Navi Sheker. We're judging a Kohen Gadol, who's the highest Kohen in the land. The nature of the issue at stake requires a Beis Din of Shivim V'Echad, the highest court in the land, because it's a Dovar HaGadol. But there's another role, another function of Beis Din, another obligation that's incumbent upon the Sanhedrin HaGadol of 71. That's called the Dovar HaKosha. What's a Dovar HaKosha? There's a machlokes amongst the Chachamim about a din min adinim, any din whatsoever. And we don't have what's called a hachra. We don't have a final decision. Here, it's not a Dovar HaGadol. The issue at stake is not a Navi or a Kohen Gadol or a Shevet, but the issue is for the future of the Torah, the Mesoras HaTorah, what is the din in such case? And we cannot come to a definite conclusion. We take it to the highest court of the land. That parsha, says the Brisker Rav, you will find in Shoftim, in Sefer Dvarim, ki pole mimcha davar, bein dam ledin, bein nega lenega, v'kamta v'alisa l'amokam ahu, v'kamta alisa, Chazal say, you go up to the Lishkas HaGozis on the Har HaBayis, where the Sanhedrin HaGadol is sitting, and they will decide the law. If one of the judges on that Bezdin or on any Bezdin will decide to defy the decision of the High Court, and he will go out and give a horah against the horah of the Bezdin and say the din is not like that, he becomes what? A Zakiman. Has to be put to death. All because the final achra in a Dabra Kasha is in the hands of the Bezdin HaGadol. Says the Brisker Rav, Moshe Rabbeinu has the status of Shivim V'Echad only as far as the Dabra Kosh is concerned. Once the institution, the enterprise of a Sanhedrin Agdola was established, and the Torah says, gather together 70 elders, at that point, the Dabra Gadol must be implemented under the supervision of a Bezdin HaGadol. Moshe Rabbeinu's status as Shivim V'Echad is only as far as the Dabra Kosh is concerned. And all this took place, emerged in Parshas Yisro, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Dabra Kosh Yavinu Elecha, that your status as a one-man show, Bezdin HaGadol, only is as far as the Dabra Kosh. You will be the father authority. You are the lawgiver because you received the Torah and you are given special authority to interpret the law, as if you were a Bezdin HaGadol. That's only with Moshe Rabbeinu. Once we go to Yoshua and we go on to the rest of Klal Yisrael, we need a Bezdin HaGadol to decide in any controversy over the Din Min HaDinim. But with the emergence of the institution, the enterprise of a Bezdin HaGadol, as far as Gadol, Dabra Gadol is concerned, Moshe Rabbeinu would no longer be considered a Bezdin HaGadol. He's only a Bezdin HaGadol as far as what, Rav Osai? The Dabra Kosher. And the Brisker Rav brings a raya for this. An unbelievable raya. It's a Rambam which you can miss. The Rambam speaks about what's called Minui Melech. And the Rambam writes in Hilchas Melachim that the first Melech be Yisrael was Yoshua, and he was appointed by Moshe Rabbeinu. The second Melech be Yisrael was Shaul, and then David. They were both appointed by Shmuel HaNavi. And the Rambam writes that Shmuel HaNavi had a Bezdin. He had a Bezdin of 70 elders, and he presided over that Bezdin. And therefore, says the Rambam, Shmuel was authorized, together with his Bezdin, to appoint Shaul as a Melech, and subsequently David as a Melech. Why? Because Minyan Melech is a Dabra Gadol, and it requires a Bezdin HaGadol. Correct? Now, what about Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu appoints Yoshua. What would you say? Just give me a knee-jerk response. If Moshe Rabbeinu is Shaveh, Shakul, Kenegen, Shivim V'Echad, does he need a Bezdin in order to appoint Yoshua? No. The Rambam writes, U'Moshe u'Bezdino minu es Yoshua. Why did the Rambam add those two words, Moshe u'Bezdino? If you open up the Parshas Balosch, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Moshe Rabbeinu, Asfa li Shivim Zakenim. Moshe Rabbeinu appoints a Bezdin HaGadol Shivim Zakenim. But why is Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of Parshas Pinchas, when he appoints Yoshua as the Melech Bisro, why does he need his Bezdin? Why is the Rambam saying Moshe Bezdin? I understand why Shmuel needs a Bezdin. Shmuel doesn't have the status of a Bezdin HaGadol. He's not a one-man show. He needs a Bezdin to appoint a king. But Moshe Rabbeinu, in appointing Yoshua, could have done it on his own. The answer is, says the Brisker Rav, because Moshe Rabbeinu had already appointed Shivim Zakenim. They now take over control and authority in an exclusive way over a Davar HaGadol. Moshe Rabbeinu, in his unique status, is only as far as the Dabra Kosher. Is Memela says the Brisker Rav, in appointing a king, which we'll see in our Mishnah, requires Shiva V'Echad, that's called a Dovra Gadol. Once the institution of a Beis Din HaGadol of Shiva V'Echad's Kenim came into existence, Moshe Rabbeinu no longer had the power to decide a Dovra Gadol. Again, that wasn't Yisro's decision, but that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision. And the status of Moshe Rabbeinu as Shakul Keneged Shiva V'Echad was removed from him as far as the Dovra Gadol. What he left with, what was left with, the Dovra Kosher. So Moshe Rabbeinu would be the final Achra in the Dovra Kosher, but as far as the Dovra Gadol is concerned, that was removed from Moshe Rabbeinu's authority, and that was given to the Beis Din HaGadol. Hence, in Minui Melech, which is one of the cases listed in our Mishnah as a Dovra Gadol, we need Shiva V'Echad. A beautiful shtickle Torah, the Brisker Rav. So when we're going to learn the sugya now of Adon Yechidi, and if he's a Yachid Mumcha, he doesn't need the help of two other Dayanim, we're reminded now of a precedent to this concept of a Yachid Mumcha in the case of Moshe Rabbi. The last line I want to leave you with before we part for Shabbos is Rashi on the Mishnah, Dibra Maskel Nuchemis Rishus. Do we see this Rashi? Let me find it for you.
Yes, it's the last word on the third line down of the wide Rashi.
Okay, so we're three lines down in the wide lines of Rashi. There are about 10 lines or so. We're on the third line, and the last word of the line is Bilulchemis, going on to the next line, Rishus. Now, I'm going to ask you the following question, and you give me the answer based on Rashi. We need a Sanhedrin Agdola in order to send our battalions forth into Melchemes Rishus. What would you say, as opposed to Melchemes Mitzvah? In a Melchemes Mitzvah, the Melech takes the army, conscripts the army, and sends them out to a Melchama, and we don't need Beis Din HaGadol. What would you say about Amalek? To destroy Amalek, is it enough that the Melech sends us out to destroy Amalek, or do we need the Beis Din HaGadol to make that decision? Is Melchemes Amalek a Melchemes Mitzvah or Melchemes Rishus? If it's a Melchemes Mitzvah, you don't need Beis Din HaGadol. We only need Beis Din HaGadol for a Melchemes Rishus. What would you say about Amalek? It's a classic case of Melchemes Mitzvah. Not only is it Melchemes Mitzvah, the Torah has a losaser if you don't go out and battle against Amalek. So the Torah says, Macho emche zichra Amalek. But now read Rashi. Rashi says the following, Kol milchama kari rishus. Every battle is called rishus, and it requires what? Everybody? Beis Din HaGadol. Levad. I have only one exception. Milchemes Yoshua, Shahoiso Lichboshes Eretz Yisrael. He had to destroy the seven nations, the Palestinians, who occupied the land. What about Milchemes Amalek? Rashi may have overlooked Amalek. He didn't give me an exhaustive list, but that's impossible. Because Rashi says, Kol Milchoma Kori Rishus. With the only exception of Lo Sechaya Kol Neshama, when Yoshua is commanded to destroy the occupiers of the land. So all of Mepharshim say, what happened to Amalek? The Rambam, on the other hand, opens up Hilchos Malacha by saying that when you appoint Melech, he's obligated to take the people out to battle in a Melchemes Amalek, because the mitzvah of Melchemes Amalek. The Rambam clearly identifies Amalek as a Melchemes Mitzvah. Hence, according to the Rambam, we don't need, the king doesn't need the approval and the authority of Beis Din HaGadol. He can make that as a one-man decision because it's a Melchemes Mitzvah. Just like Yoshua didn't need the consult to the consent of the Beis Din HaGadol when he went out to conquer the seven nations. Why does Rashi leave out Melchemes
Mitzvah? The Amalekites, even though they were not one of the seven nations, they still were dwelling in and they took on certain menhagim that disguised themselves, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, but Melchemes Amalek is not limited to Eretz Yisrael. Melchemes Amalek is anywhere on the face of the earth. We have to destroy Amalek. And if it's Hashem, Kshibane Amigdash, and there'll be peace in the land, and we'll appoint a king, the first mitzvah he's going to get involved in is going out to Melchemes Amalek.
That's why
we're waiting so long for Mashiach, to destroy Amalek. So in any event, this Rashi is a pella. I'm just telling you that we have to come to terms with this Rashi. I don't know how. that in terms of a Beis Din Shel Shiva V'Echad and the requirement for that authority, Rashi seems to assume that for Melchemes HaMolek, that comes under the jurisdiction, the exclusive jurisdiction of a Beis Din HaGadol. The Rambam, I think, would disagree with Rashi vehemently, because the Rambam holds that Melchemes HaMolek is a Melchemes Mitzvah. And Melchemes Mitzvah doesn't require a Beis Din HaGadol. Rabbos, I just want to wish everyone a great Shabbos. And again, you know, Rabbi Myers is coming back probably by Sunday, so you'll have to do what you have to do, because you know, we don't want to decide and whatever. Anyway, so wish everyone a great Shabbos and prepare for the next election, which will take place in three months.
Rashi doesn't have to consider the Melchemes HaMolek, because it's an individual mitzvah. Each individual person has to kill a Amalek.
So it's not a mitzvah. That's interesting.
It's not a Melchemes.
So now we have to understand, if an Amalek comes along, do I have to kill him? And if one of the seven nations comes along, do I have to kill him? Is that part of the mitzvah? Or it's only a Melchemes on the tzibur to go ahead and kill the entire nation? You know? So that could be a difference between Zion, Amalek, and Amalek.
I have a question.
So don't steal my next shiur.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Yeah.
Where does Pesach Sheni fall into this? Pesach Sheni... Most Rabbeinu would talk about it, but I think it says somewhere that